A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking how to actually take care of good quality leather. Not the cheap bonded stuff, but real full grain and top grain leather. What does a proper occasional maintenance cycle look like to protect against water damage and safely remove stains? And I think the unspoken question here is, why do some people's leather goods last a decade, while other people's fall apart in 2 winters?
That's the exact right framing, and the answer isn't the leather itself, it's almost always the maintenance cycle, or the lack of one. I was reading through the University of Northampton's Institute for Creative Leather Technologies. They published a study in 2023 that quantified something we've all seen, but never measured. Salt crystals, after just 5 wet-dry cycles, reduce the tensile strength of leather by up to 18%. That's not cosmetic damage, that's structural failure.
So basically, 1 winter of commuting in Chicago and your boots are 1/5 weaker than when you bought them.
And that's before we even talk about what happens when the collagen fibers themselves start breaking down. So what's actually happening at the fiber level when leather gets wet, and why does salt make it so much worse?
Let's do the material science first, because I think most people, and I include myself in this, before I ruined a perfectly good pair of boots about 8 years ago. Most people think of leather as this tough, impermeable material. It's skin. It's tough skin. But it's not armor.
Leather is a matrix of collagen fibers, these long protein chains that are cross-linked by tannins. That cross-linking is what turns animal hide into leather instead of just skin that rots. But here's the key property, leather is hygroscopic. It naturally absorbs and releases moisture from the environment. That's not a design flaw. It's what makes leather comfortable to wear. The problem is the cycle of wetting and drying. When water gets into the fiber structure, the fibers swell. When it dries, they shrink. Swell, shrink, swell, shrink. And eventually, the fibers crack. It's the same mechanism that causes mud to crack when it dries, just at a microscopic level.
Salt accelerates this because it's pulling water deeper into the fiber structure.
First, salt is hygroscopic too. It draws moisture. So salt on the surface of your leather is actively pulling humidity from the air into the leather. Second, and this is what the Northampton study focused on, when the water evaporates, the salt recrystallizes. Sodium chloride crystals are sharp at the microscopic level. They physically abrade the collagen fibers as they form. It's like having tiny shards of glass inside your leather every time it dries.
The enemy isn't water. It's the wet-dry cycle, and salt is the accelerant. That already changes how I think about maintenance. You're not trying to make leather waterproof. You're trying to slow down the absorption enough that the cycle doesn't do damage.
That distinction matters because it defines what products you use and how often. Let me frame the scope here, because this is important. We're talking about full grain and top grain leather. These are finished leathers with a pigment or aniline coating. Not suede, not nubuck, not bonded leather. Those are entirely different material classes with different care rules. Suede, for example, you can't use wax on suede. It'll mat the nap and ruin the texture. So everything we say today applies to the smooth, finished leathers you'd find on a good pair of boots, a belt, a wallet, a bag.
The core framework is 3 phases. Clean, condition, protect. They're sequential, they each have a specific chemical purpose, and you cannot skip one or combine them into a single product. Which is the first myth we should probably kill. The idea that there's one magic goop that does everything.
The one product myth. It's the most common failure mode in leather care. Cleaning, conditioning, and protecting are chemically incompatible in a single formula. A cleaner is a surfactant. It's designed to lift and emulsify dirt and oils. A conditioner is designed to penetrate the fiber structure and replace lost oils. A protectant is designed to sit on the surface and create a barrier. You can't have one molecule do all 3. Anyone selling you an all-in-one is selling you something that does one of those things poorly and the other two not at all.
Think of it like changing the oil in a car. You're not cleaning the engine. You're replacing a sacrificial layer. The oil is supposed to degrade so the engine doesn't. A good leather finish is the same logic. It's a consumable barrier, not a permanent coating.
That's a much better analogy than the car wax one I was going to use. Let's start with the phase that most people get wrong, cleaning. And I mean fundamentally, chemically wrong.
I've got saddle soap on my shelf. I've been using it for years. I'm now nervous that I've been using it wrong.
You probably have been. Most people use saddle soap incorrectly. Here's what saddle soap actually is. It's a blend of potassium soap, which is a surfactant, and waxes, typically beeswax. The potassium soap emulsifies oils and dirt so you can lift them off the surface. The beeswax deposits a thin protective layer. It's a good product. Phoebings and Angelus are the industry standards. But the mistake people make is applying saddle soap and then just leaving the residue. They lather it on, maybe buff a little, and call it done.
Which, in fairness, is what the instructions on some tins actually say to do.
And it's wrong. The correct method is, lather with a damp cloth, scrub gently in circular motions to lift the dirt and salt, and then, critically, wipe off completely with a clean damp cloth. If you don't wipe off the residue, that thin wax layer traps whatever dirt and salt you didn't lift against the surface of the leather. You've essentially shrink-wrapped the contaminants onto your boots.
You're making a little dirt and salt sandwich, with wax as the bread.
The saddest, most expensive sandwich. And here's the other mistake. Overcleaning. I saw a case study a few years ago. Someone had a pair of Red Wing Iron Rangers, which are full-grain oil-tanned leather. He cleaned them with saddle soap every single month for 2 years. The result? Micro-cracking at every flex point. The toe crease, the ankle, the heel counter. Because saddle soap, being a surfactant, doesn't just lift dirt. It also strips some of the natural oils from the leather. Every month, he was removing a little more of what kept the fibers flexible. Meanwhile, another pair cleaned once per season, so 4 times a year, with proper conditioning afterward, was supple, had a natural patina, and showed zero cracking.
The rhythm matters as much as the method. What about salt specifically? You mentioned the Northampton study. If someone's boots have been through a winter of salted sidewalks, saddle soap alone isn't going to neutralize that.
This is where the vinegar step comes in. And I know it sounds like a folk remedy, but the chemistry is sound. A 50-50 solution of white vinegar and water. The acetic acid in the vinegar neutralizes the alkaline salt residue and dissolves the salt crystals that have formed in the fiber structure. You apply it with a damp cloth after cleaning, before conditioning. But, and this is a big but, you must test on a hidden area first. Vinegar can strip aniline dyes. If you've got a pair of dress shoes with a hand-burnished finish, vinegar can pull that color right out.
The tongue of the boot, or the inside of the ankle, somewhere nobody sees.
And if the color transfers to the cloth, stop immediately. Use just water and a leather cleaner instead. But for most work boots and casual leather goods, the vinegar step is the single best thing you can do after a winter of salt exposure.
What about stains? The prompt specifically asked about stain removal, and I feel like this is where people panic and reach for whatever's under the sink.
The panic is the problem. The most important thing with stains is identifying what kind of stain you're dealing with, because the removal strategy for a water-based stain is the opposite of what you'd do for an oil-based stain. Water-based stains, coffee, wine, soda, you blot immediately. Don't rub. Rubbing spreads the liquid and works it deeper into the fiber structure. Blot with a clean, dry cloth to absorb as much as possible. Then use a pH-neutral leather cleaner applied to a cloth. Never directly to the leather, and work from the outside of the stain inward. This prevents spreading the stain into a larger ring.
Why pH neutral specifically?
Because acidic or alkaline cleaners can react with the tannins and the dye. Leather is typically slightly acidic, around a pH of 4.5 to 5. If you hit it with something alkaline, like household cleaner, you're disrupting the chemical structure of the leather itself. You'll get discoloration, drying, and potentially weakening of the fibers. So pH neutral only. Bickmore makes a good one, as does Saphir.
Oil-based stains. Grease, ink, the dreaded pizza slice that drips onto your new bag.
Completely different approach. Oil wicks into the porous fiber structure of leather almost instantly. Your instinct is going to be to use heat or soap. Heat dries oil deeper into the fibers. It's the worst thing you can do. Instead, you want to draw the oil out. And the way you do that is with a dry, absorbent powder, cornstarch or talcum powder. Sprinkle it generously over the stain, let it sit for 24 hours. The powder creates a concentration gradient. The oil in the leather fibers is drawn toward the dry powder at the surface through capillary action. It's the same principle that makes a paper towel soak up water, just slower.
So the oil is literally climbing out of the leather fiber by fiber.
After 24 hours, brush off the powder. If the stain is still visible, repeat. I've seen this work on stains that were days old. The key is patience. If you try to speed it up with a hairdryer, you're just setting the stain permanently.
The no-go list. I know you've got opinions on neatsfoot oil.
Neatsfoot oil is a trap. It's been recommended for decades, and it's one of the worst things you can put on good leather. Here's why. Neatsfoot oil oxidizes. Over time, it darkens the leather permanently, and not in a nice patina way. It goes muddy brown, then almost black. It also continues to oxidize and can become sticky, attracting dust and grit. And because it's a penetrating oil, once it's in the fiber structure, you can't get it out.
What about mink oil? That's the other one you see everywhere. Every outdoor store has tubs of mink oil next to the boots.
Mink oil is a heavy animal fat. It clogs the pores of the leather. Once those pores are clogged, future conditioning products can't penetrate. They just sit on the surface. So you've essentially sealed your leather in a state of gradual dehydration. It also darkens leather permanently, and in humid conditions, it can become tacky. I've seen boots treated with mink oil that felt sticky to the touch in summer. That's the oil going rancid and interacting with humidity.
Neatsfoot oil oxidizes into a dark, sticky mess. Mink oil clogs the pores and goes rancid. What about silicone-based waterproofers? Those aerosol sprays you see at the shoe store?
The worst of the three in some ways. Silicone sprays create a plasticized layer on the surface of the leather. It's not breathable. So moisture from your foot, or ambient humidity absorbed by the leather, gets trapped underneath that silicone layer. You're creating a miniature greenhouse inside your leather. The trapped moisture promotes mold growth and, over time, causes the leather to rot from the inside. The outside looks fine, shiny even, while the structural integrity of the fibers is being destroyed underneath. It's the leather equivalent of rust under paint.
The three most commonly recommended products are all actively destructive in different ways.
The leather care aisle is basically a museum of bad chemistry, which brings us to conditioning. Once the leather is clean and the fibers are exposed, you have a narrow window to put the oils back in before the leather starts to dry out. That's conditioning.
This is where I think people get confused about what they're actually doing. They think they're moisturizing the leather like putting lotion on skin.
That's not a terrible analogy, but it's not quite right. What you're actually doing is replacing the triglycerides and fatty acids that are the natural lubricants between collagen fibers. Full-grain leather typically starts at 14 to 18% oil content by weight. That's what makes it flexible. The fibers can slide past each other without breaking. When that oil content drops below about 8%, the fibers become brittle. They snap instead of flexing. That's what a crack is. It's a bunch of collagen fibers breaking at a flex point.
Conditioning isn't cosmetic. It's structural maintenance.
And the chemistry of conditioners breaks down into three families. Animal-based, lanolin, neatsfoot oil. These are closest to the natural oils in leather, but they can go rancid over time. Plant-based, jojoba oil, coconut oil. More stable, less likely to oxidize, but they don't penetrate as deeply. Synthetic, esters, silicone-free polymer blends. Most consistent performance, but they can build up if you overapply. My recommendation for most people is a blend, something like Bic 4 or Venetian shoe cream, which combine beeswax for a surface barrier with jojoba oil for penetration. Saphir Renovateur is the gold standard, but it's expensive and honestly overkill for a pair of work boots.
Bic 4 is the one that doesn't darken leather, right?
That's one of its main selling points. It's pH balanced, it penetrates well, and it doesn't alter the color of the leather. Venetian shoe cream gives a slightly warmer tone, which some people prefer. Both are excellent. The application protocol is where people mess up, though. Less is more. Apply a pea-sized amount to a cloth, not directly to the leather, and rub it in with circular motions. Let it sit for 15 to 20 minutes so the oils can penetrate. Then buff off the excess with a clean cloth. The test, after buffing, the leather should feel supple but not greasy. If you run your finger across it and leave a residue, you use too much.
What happens if you leave the excess on?
It attracts dust and creates a sticky film. Over time, that film oxidizes and becomes gummy. And because it's sitting on the surface, it prevents the leather from breathing. It's not as bad as silicone, but it's the same failure mode. You're sealing the leather in a state of slow suffocation.
Then phase three is protection, the final barrier.
Protection sits on top of the conditioned leather and takes the abuse so the leather doesn't have to. Two main categories, wax-based, beeswax, carnauba wax, these are durable, water-repellent, and last 3 to 6 months. The trade-off is they can darken the leather slightly, especially on lighter colors. Spray-on fluoropolymers, Nick Wax, or the old Scotchgard formula for leather. These darken less and are easier to apply, but they only last 1 to 2 months before you need to reapply. For a seasonal maintenance cycle, wax is the better choice. You're doing this 4 times a year. You want it to last.
Wax is what creates that water-beading effect. The droplets sit on the surface instead of soaking in.
That beading is your sign that the protective layer is still intact. When water stops beading and starts wetting the surface, when it soaks in and darkens the leather, it's time to reapply. Don't wait for the leather to feel dry or look dull. The water test is your early warning system.
Let's build the actual seasonal cycle. Because this is what the prompt is really asking for. Not just the chemistry, but the calendar. What does occasional maintenance actually look like across a year?
Here's the framework. Spring, this is your big cycle, right now in late May. Your leather goods have just survived winter salt, slush, and the constant wet-dry cycling of going from heated indoors to freezing outdoors. You do the full 3-phase protocol. Clean with saddle soap, vinegar rinse if there's salt residue, condition, protect with wax. That's your spring reset. Light cleaning only. Dust and sweat are your main concerns, not water damage. A damp cloth to wipe down the surface. No saddle soap unless there's a visible stain. No conditioning. You did that in spring, and over-conditioning in summer when the leather is already warm and the oils are more mobile can oversaturate the fibers. You're just maintaining. No cleaning unless stained, no wax yet. The purpose here is to replenish oils before the dry winter air hits. Indoor heating drops the relative humidity in your home to 20 or 30%. That's well below the 40% threshold where leather starts drying out. You want those collagen fibers lubricated before that happens.
Then winter. Protect only. Reapply wax before the first snow.
You conditioned in fall, the oils are there. Now you're just adding the sacrificial barrier layer. Reapply wax every couple of months through the winter, or whenever water stops beading on the surface. That's it. 4 seasonal touch points. Full cycle in spring, light clean in summer, condition in fall, protect in winter.
It's not a weekly chore. It's 4 things a year.
The most common mistake is doing a full clean condition protect cycle every month, which strips the leather of its natural oils and causes the very cracking you're trying to prevent. Over-maintenance is as destructive as neglect. Leather is not a car that needs an oil change every 3,000 miles. It's more like a cast iron pan. Season it properly, maintain it lightly, and it improves with use.
What about storage? The prompt didn't ask about it directly, but if someone is doing all this work and then throwing their boots in a plastic bin under the bed...
Storage is where a lot of good maintenance gets undone. Leather needs to breathe. Never store leather in plastic bags or sealed containers. Trapped moisture, even the ambient humidity in the air, will condense and promote mold growth. Use breathable cotton dust bags. For boots and shoes, cedar shoe trees are ideal. Cedar absorbs moisture and provides structure so the leather doesn't collapse and develop permanent creases. The sweet spot for relative humidity is 40 to 60%. Below 40, leather dries out. Above 60, mold risk increases. If you live somewhere humid, get a small hygrometer for your closet. They're $10.
We've gone from saddle soap to scientific instrumentation.
You can get one that looks like a tiny analog clock. It's not a particle accelerator.
I want to talk about a specific type of leather, because I know it changes the maintenance math. This is the leather that shows up on a lot of high-end boots and bags. It's got a reputation for being lower maintenance.
ChromaXL is a great case study because it illustrates why leather type matters for your maintenance frequency. Horween's process, and they've been doing this in Chicago since 1905, involves hot stuffing the leather with oils and waxes during tanning. The result is a leather that starts at around 20% oil content by weight. That's higher than standard corrected grain leather, which is typically 12 to 14%. So ChromeXL can go longer between conditioning cycles. I've seen ChromeXL wallets that were conditioned every 6 months show no cracking after 5 years. The same wallet conditioned every 2 years developed a crack at the fold line after 3 years. So even with high oil leather, you can't ignore it forever. But you can stretch the interval.
The general rule is, higher oil content at manufacture equals longer intervals between conditioning. But the three-phase protocol doesn't change. You just do it less often.
And this is where the cost per wear calculation comes in, which I think is the real argument for all of this. A $400 pair of boots, maintained with about $50 a year in products, lasts 10 plus years. That's $90 a year. A $200 pair of boots with no maintenance lasts 2 years. That's $100 a year. Maintenance isn't just preserving the item, it's economically rational. You spend less money over time by buying better boots and taking care of them.
You get a better product the whole time. The $400 boots in year 8 look better than the $200 boots did on day 1, because they've developed a patina instead of cracks.
Patina versus damage. That's the visual distinction between cared-for leather and neglected leather. Patina is the surface finish wearing gracefully, the oils and waxes redistributing, the color deepening at the flex points. Damage is the fiber structure failing. One is beautiful, the other is structural collapse.
Let's talk about water damage specifically, because the prompt mentions it. What's the emergency protocol if your leather gets soaked? Not a light rain, but submerged or caught in a downpour.
Stuff it with newspaper immediately. The paper wicks moisture from the inside, where it's most dangerous. Remember, leather is hygroscopic, water moves through the entire thickness. Replace the newspaper every few hours as it becomes saturated. Let the leather dry at room temperature. Never, ever put it near a radiator, a heating vent, or in direct sunlight. Heat accelerates the drying unevenly. The surface dries and shrinks while the interior is still swollen. That's how you get deep structural cracks, the kind that can't be fixed. Once the leather is dry to the touch, and this might take 24 to 48 hours, condition immediately. The drying process strips oils. Conditioning replaces them before the fibers become brittle. Then reapply your protective wax layer.
The instinct is to speed it up, put it by the fire, hit it with a hairdryer. That's exactly wrong.
Every instinct you have about drying leather quickly is wrong. Slow and cool, newspaper, patience, conditioner. That sequence will save a pair of boots that would otherwise be ruined.
If you take away nothing else from this episode, here's the seasonal cycle that will double the life of your leather goods. Spring, full clean, condition, protect. Summer, light clean only. Fall, condition only. Winter, protect only. 4 touch points a year. The product shortnessed, Phoebings or Angelus saddle soap for cleaning. Bic 4 or Venetian shoe cream for conditioning. Saphir Renovateur or Otter Wax for protection. These are the industry standards for a reason. They've been tested on full grain leather for decades.
The emergency protocol, soaked leather, gets newspaper, room temperature drying, then immediate conditioning. Don't try to speed it up.
The three-phase cycle is non-negotiable. Clean, condition, protect. Skipping any phase creates a weak link. And over-conditioning is just as bad as under-conditioning. Saturating the fibers makes the leather lose structural integrity. It goes floppy. And floppy leather is leather that's about to tear.
Remember the water test. When water stops beating on the surface of your leather, your protective layer is gone. That's your signal to reapply wax. Don't wait for visible damage. By the time you can see cracking, the collagen fibers have already been breaking for months.
Here's the thing. The leather you buy 5 years from now might not respond to this same cycle. The industry is shifting. The EU's restriction on hexavalent chromium under REH regulations, which went into effect in 2025, is pushing tanneries toward chrome-free tanning processes. Chrome-tanned leather is more water-resistant than vegetable-tanned leather. It's one of the reasons we could get away with the maintenance cycles we've been describing, as chrome-free leather becomes the standard. And it will, because the EU market drives global tanning standards. The maintenance protocols are going to have to change.
Vegetable-tanned leather absorbs water more readily and dries out faster. It may need more frequent conditioning. It may need different types of protectants. The waxes and oils we're recommending today might not be optimal for the leather that's being produced in 2030. And we haven't even touched on the so-called leather alternatives, mushroom leather, cactus leather, all the plant-based composites that are marketed as leather but aren't actually leather at all. They're entirely different materials with different failure modes. The advice we've given today applies to animal hide that's been tanned. If your leather bag is made from cactus fibers in a polyurethane matrix, none of this applies.
Which is why the single most useful thing you can do before buying a leather item is ask the manufacturer for their recommended maintenance cycle. If they can't give you one, if they look at you blankly or say, just wipe it with a damp cloth, that's a red flag about the quality of the leather and the company's relationship to their own materials.
A company that uses good leather knows how to care for it. A company that doesn't is probably hiding something about what their product is actually made of.
The maintenance cycle is also a litmus test for the purchase itself. Before you even get to the cleaning and conditioning, you're already filtering for quality.
And that's the kind of informed consumer behavior that actually shifts industry practices over time. When enough people ask about maintenance cycles, companies that can't answer start losing sales. It's market pressure toward better materials.
All right, before we close out, and now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
During the High Medieval Period, travelers crossing the Borkal region of what is now Chad reported a recurring atmospheric phenomenon in which the setting sun would appear to split into three distinct orbs for several seconds before merging again, an effect later attributed to temperature inversion layers over the Tibesti Mountains. Though contemporary accounts described it as the sky dividing itself in argument.
Right.
The sky dividing itself in argument.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com. And if you found this useful, leave us a review wherever you listen. We'll be back next week.
Clean, condition, protect. In that order.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.